Welcome to the More Than Fitness Podcast.
God, you got the background. Hey, look, we got matching shirts on. How cool.
Saw that, man. I like it. Thank you.
Yeah, of course. Of course. And you got the book. What's the background right there? What stadium is that?
Michigan Stadium.
Of course. Of course. I love it. But yeah, man, welcome. This is actually not our first time. I guess it's our first time formally meeting, but I was actually in Philadelphia last year with Cody McBroom and Austin Current. I actually had more hair and I had a black and white pineapple Hawaiian shirt on. But that's where I first got to meet you and everybody at RP, and it was
at the summit. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Man. Thanks for attending that.
Yeah, no, it was everything I wanted it to be. It was absolutely wonderful. I figured Renaissance periodization never lets me down. So yeah, thank you for putting it on and for having such amazing company. And that's what we'll definitely get into here in just a sec. But my guest today is Nick Shaw. And real quick, I just like to, as far as intros go, it can be the elevator pitch. It can be whenever you meet somebody for the first time. Nick, what do you tell people it is that you do?
I work for RP. That's what I usually tell people. I usually say, yeah, I work with RP. And then people are like, oh, hey, are you like the guy that runs it? I'm like, yeah, I guess so. Yeah, I guess I'm that guy. RP is just kind of part of me. It's part of who I am. And I love what I do, and been able to help a ton of people in health and fitness, and you know, maybe now stepping out a little bit more into mindset and overcoming obstacles and whatnot with my latest book. So yeah, I'm excited, man. Excited to help more people.
Yeah, of course. Of course. And like you do with everything else, I'm sure you'll only continue to get better. But what I typically like to do with these podcasts, just for my own selfish reasons to gain context with you, and also to give my listeners who might not know exactly who you are, I kind of like to really get into people's stories. And I'm really fascinated with not exactly the decisions you made specifically, but the reasoning why you made those decisions. So typically we're like, let's go back somewhat to the beginning. Where are you from, Nick?
Born and raised in the great state of Michigan.
I guess that makes sense.
Makes sense. I have a bunch of Michigan stuff in the background here behind me. Went to school at the University of Michigan, actually. It was always my dream to go there. I just grew up a big Michigan fan. And so, you know, went there, and that's actually where I met Dr. Mike Isertel. He was also going there. So Mike probably has a cooler story. He came from Moscow, you know, when he was like 7 years old to Detroit, and ended up going to Michigan. He was a couple years ahead of me in school. So we met in the student weight room. We were both lifting. He convinced me to get going in powerlifting. And I was hooked. I've always been into fitness ever since high school, sports background. I loved working out. I loved training. I pretty much realized that I had the ability is the right word, but I just liked working harder than everyone else. I would just bust my tail. And because of that, because I was not talented, I was not a talented person when it came to sports, I just simply outworked most other people. And so the idea of lifting and running and getting better has always appealed to me since I was 13, 14, 15 years old.
That's exactly what happened with me too. I think lifting was the first thing. The reason why I got into fitness was because it was the first time where my hard work actually showed me tangible results. And so that came in the sense of wanting to get bigger, stronger, and faster for high school football. And so that's whenever I was like, okay, I put my mind to this. There's ways to get bigger, stronger, and faster. I just have the distance between what I want and where I am now. There's just hard work in between there. And that's what lifting did for me. So I'm sure that carried with you into school and things. Did you take that same mentality and put that towards your schoolwork as well? Or was that not as easy as the fitness game?
You know, I have to be 100% honest. I put much more into fitness. Listen, I always got good grades, but that was probably much more so that I was probably just reasonably intelligent. I definitely was not a bookworm. And That was in high school. And high school is a little bit easier. I was able to roll through that with, you know, pretty much straight A's. College was definitely a little bit harder. And I probably just didn't have the greatest study habits, you know, like all college kids. I would sort of put off things until the end and, you know, then cram at the end. I did fine in college. I want to say, you know, my GPA was somewhere around 3.4, 3.5. So like, you know.
What'd you major in?
Sport management.
Okay. All right. And so this is where I like to get into the, what I love about talking with people is figuring out the transition moments, because it's like, okay, you studied sport management and then now you're here where you are today. Right. But there's a lot of gaps in between. And I want to know is like, whenever you were in college, did you know that you were going to make this amazing fitness company, or did you have other goals in mind? Did you have no idea what you were going to do? What was that kind of like?
I love sports. So that's why I went into kinesiology at Michigan. I just knew I'm going to do something that's related to sports. I don't know what exactly, but I know that's it. And funny enough, I actually thought that I was going to be an athletic director. It's like, well, I like sports and that seems like a pretty cool gig and I could be around sports all the time. And hey, maybe I'd start out at the high school level and work up to the college level, something like that. And again, I met Mike my sophomore year of college. He was 2 years ahead of me, so he was a senior. And I realized pretty quickly that then fitness was what I really wanted to do. I'd always loved fitness, but I didn't really know that I could do a career with it. And that was kind of the switch for me. I was like, okay, I still love sports, of course, but now I really want to transition this into something fitness. In kinesiology, you're already taking some fitness classes. So it was a pretty good transition, especially going into my junior and senior years. You have a little more freedom and you get to take much more kinesiology related classes instead of, you know, general studies, whatever that is. And so that worked out, but I didn't really know what I was going to do. Again, Mike, always convincing me to do things, was getting a job as a personal trainer in New York City. He calls me up one day and he's like, hey, what are you going to do after college? And this is, you know, a couple months before I was going to graduate. I thought I was probably just going to work at a gym somewhere in Michigan. He says, you need to come out to New York. You need to interview. They need more trainers. Come out here. We'll, you know, live together. We'll train together full time. I'm like, yeah, done. Sign me up. I'd never been in New York City my entire life. My buddy drove me out there. It's kind of a 9-10 hour drive. Stayed just basically sleeping on someone's floor. Interviewed, got it. It was a hard interview, of course. It's for a personal trainer job. But actually, real funny story about that. Mike and I were the only people that showed up in suits.
Oh no. Was it like a Step Brothers moment where you're both like in the tuxedos and just overdressed?
He wasn't there. He had interviewed a couple weeks before me.
Okay.
But he's just, you know, it's like my first real like job interview. So I don't know any better. I show up trying to look professional and, you know, it's actually was in the gym. It's just like, oh my gosh, this is hilarious that I'm dressed like this. So anyways, fast forward that, you know, get it. We both move out there. We're training together full time. He goes about a year later. He's like, yeah, I can't keep doing this. He's like, I need to do a little bit more. Totally get that. He goes back to get his PhD at East Tennessee State. I stayed. I kept training people. Started to transition a little bit more to doing my own thing, which is working.
I'm sorry to cut you off. I'm in New York City, by the way. I live in Hell's Kitchen. And so what part of New York City were you in?
Man, I was in New York City from 2009 to 2015, so like 5 or 6 years, but I probably lived in 5 or 6 different apartments.
Okay.
I lived in Battery Park City the okay. first year. I lived on the Upper East Side. I lived on, you know, 81st Street. I lived on 90th Street. I lived on 91st Street. I lived on 96th Street.
Oh, and, wow.
Yeah, so I was all over the place.
And you came from, because I got a lot of your info from Steve Hall's podcast, Revive Stronger. And you came, so it was small town, rural Michigan. So I'm actually born and raised in Kentucky. I just moved out to New York City 4 months ago, actually. And so this is all, I feel like we have some parallels here. It's interesting times going from small town Kentucky and then now being in right in the heart of Manhattan.
Yeah, I at least had a little transition because I went real small town to University of Michigan. So I had that. Mm-hmm. And then right from Michigan into New York City. So it was definitely interesting. It's probably a lot more interesting for you, given COVID and everything this year. I don't know what New York City looks like.
It's like New York City on training wheels, at least I think, right? Like I've been here, I've visited probably like 8 to 10 times before I actually moved out here. We're here because my girlfriend's in law school. Actually, she's in the other room taking a class right now. I'm 26, she's 24. And so I had the career where I was able to move out. And so I was like, yeah, let's do it. Let's go to New York City. We'll figure it out. And we've been enjoying it ever since. So yeah, I wanted to bring that up because I knew you were from rural Michigan and then moved out there. But yeah, so then what happened after New York City? You said that then there's kind of a transition period after that.
Yeah. So Mike had left, he went back to school. I was training people mostly on my own and we just were always referring back and forth. Like, hey, like, why don't we keep doing this? Let's just start a little company. I had already formed my own business for personal training, which was called Shaw Fitness.
Online coaching?
No, I wasn't really doing online coaching yet. And I was actually, Mike was doing more online coaching. So I had that company set up, ended up just changing the name of it to Renaissance Periodization, which in hindsight is funny that we had, that's how it came to be or whatever. And then the name itself is pretty funny because again, it just shows like we never had these grand ambitions that RP was going to be really well known. Like, of course, we just go by RP now, but back then it was like a big deal. We're like, yeah, we want this like cool name, like really stands out. Renaissance, rebirth, and there's a hedge fund in New York City. I guess they're based in Long Island, but Renaissance Technologies, and they hire basically the brightest mathematicians in the world to have like a formula on how the market works. They always consistently outperform it. And so that was really kind of like the motivation to form RP. And that's where the Renaissance part came from. It's like, we don't want to just be another company. We want to kind of have formulas and stuff built so we can always outperform and quote unquote be the average, you know, results in fitness. So that's where that came from. And it eventually led to doing online coaching because I realized me running around all over New York City wasn't super efficient use of my time. And
what age, sorry to cut you off again. What age was this at? I like to give time markers with this so people can know.
This was 2011, let's call it. So I was 24.
Okay. All right. So 24. All right. So yeah, we are close there. And so you were running around all over New York City. And then, so you were just like, what, this isn't a viable long-term strategy?
Yeah, for the most part, again, I had a son, he was born not too long after, and it was just like, boy, this just isn't, it's not super feasible to just be going all over the city. And if you really want to make good money as a personal trainer, you have to be up before the crack of dawn, you have to be working until 8 or 9 o'clock at night, and you know, usually your down hours are in the afternoon or whatever, and that's when I would go train. And it just wasn't, I was like, you know, I could keep doing this because I enjoy it. Some clients more than others, of course. Sometimes you just do it because you have to. But some people were a real treat to train and work with. And I just kind of realized that. And I did a little bit of the online stuff. And I was like, wow, this is really cool. I can sit in my apartment, yeah, write programs for people and do things. I don't have to hop on the subway and deal with, you know, thousands of other people and rush hour traffic, all that. Which like, it was fine. I really liked New York City. We ended up having two kids and we're like, okay, we can't really pull this off anymore. It's not super realistic. And so we ended up moving down to North Carolina. But yeah, no, I loved it, but it just sort of made sense. Like online coaching was definitely the way that things were going to be trending, at least it appeared. And I mean, so this was even, there weren't as many online coaches then.
Right.
Now everyone does it. And yeah, especially in 2020, literally every person in fitness is doing the online thing. So maybe we were a little bit ahead of the game, I guess, in hindsight. But again, that just sort of led to the idea of, well, how do I more efficiently scale my time? And that's kind of what led into online coaching and then led into more digital products. And that really started to take off from there.
Oh, okay. So that was the next phase that I was looking for, because I was wondering how you went from online coaching, so just like one-to-one coaching, I'm assuming, and then you were just like, okay, I need to scale this a little bit better, I'm assuming. And then so that's whenever you went into the product space a little bit more?
Yeah, more or less. We kind of knew that our methodology worked really well. And so Mike sat down and wrote RP Diet 1.0, which came out in October of 2014. It did really well. We sold it through Juggernaut with Chad Wesley Smith, great guy. And that was sort of the other light bulb moment. I was like, wow, this was really cool. Like, this just reached, you know, hundreds, if not thousands of people in the span of a couple of days. We just simply can't do this with one-on-one coaching. Even if we hired in more coaches, it didn't really seem like that was going to be the right approach, because, you know, any one coach can only work with 50, maybe 100 clients. Like, 100 is a lot.
Yeah.
You know, I probably still had that many myself when I was trying to do all this other stuff. And so that was kind of, it was just the light bulb of like, hey, this is probably where things need to go. And that was the path that we were going to take.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that that was somewhat exciting. And then, so from there, it's like, what did you, after you made the products and things, and then you ended up moving, was there a moment that it really started to excite you to kind of see the success that you had with RP, and then the potential that you had? Because you knew you had this winning formula, you know, you had, so the team at the time was just you and Mike, is that correct?
For the most part, yeah. Early on, we might have had one or two other coaches, and then we recruited a few more. And, you know, before we knew it, we probably had five or six people. And then, yeah, so 2015, we had just moved. The diet templates had come out in February of 2015, and those are really starting to pick up. And it was probably that summer when I sort of learned how to automate things more, that when I was able to take a step back, stop doing so much like manual stuff and sending everything, that it's the trajectory really started to go up. And I was like, wow, this is really, really cool. Ended up having to recruit my wife to come in and help, because I was like, I just simply can't do this all myself. And at the time, you know, she wasn't enjoying her job, but she had a very good, you know, sort of a corporate legal type job. She was high-end administration. And she was just like, I don't, this culture, all that stuff, politics, you know, inside the business is just not fun. So it worked out really well. And she was able to start helping me with everything. And eventually, you know, she started doing all our cookbooks, which are just such a natural fit with everything else we do. So it all just worked out from there. And we were able to see, you know, the templates really take off, because people just wanted a more affordable approach to coaching.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. And obviously, yeah, it did wonderful. And what I'm wondering, and we're definitely, we'll move on to your book, Fit for Success, by the way, going to go ahead and put that plug in there. What I found myself with is I started out with one evolution of being obsessed with diet and exercise, right? And that's what allowed me to become a registered dietitian, and then also be an online coach and provide for my clients an evidence-based service, et cetera, right? That was the foundation of that. But then the evolution I'm going through now is the business side of things, the marketing. It's a completely different game, right, than diet and exercise. And I know how much pride you guys have in being evidence-based in the diet and exercise field. And then, so did you kind of take that same mindset and apply that towards figuring out problems with your business, like you talked about with automating and things? Like, did you have to then shift the gear, like, okay, I'm going to stop learning as much at least about diet and exercise, and then shift gears into business, marketing, sales, et cetera?
Yeah. So again, this goes back to the idea of, you know, did I ever expect to be running a business and all that stuff? I mean, yes and no. But I quickly realized in 2015, with having to do so much, I was just like, I need to figure out and get some help from other people on what to do, because it's just impossible to know everything. And again, it's tempting on the business side of things to not want to give that up, because typically we always feel like we can always do the best job. And so, okay, I get it. It makes a lot of sense. But at the same time, once I started letting other people come in and start lending their expertise and doing what they needed to do, boy, it was just like, I'm an idiot. I can't believe I wasn't doing this earlier.
Of course. You know? Like, yeah. Delegate your weaknesses. Yeah.
Sure. Totally. All that stuff. And it's just, because we were just slammed customer service wise, always responding to everything. And then once we started bringing in other people to help with that, it just was this huge burden lifted off, that we weren't having to work literally around the clock. So we couldn't take a day off. We did not take days off. We never took days off. And I'm not sure if people really understand that. But basically all of 2015 and 2016, I was working every single day. I was answering every single, you know, social media comment or message and email and chat or whatever. Like, we were doing all of that. Again, and it was great. I'm not complaining by any means, because it helped set the foundation of RP and having good customer service and treating people right. Of course, those are super, super important. But it just kind of led to a little bit of burnout. And here's the thing. We couldn't take a day off, because then now we would be 2 days behind. It's like, well, now you're just never going to catch up. Like, you basically have to pull an all-nighter to catch up. And so, like, once we were able, and it's really hard too, because you're so far into it that it's hard to take a step back and kind of see that, you know, looking down on things. It's really hard to do that when you're so caught up in the middle of it. But once we were able to do that a little bit, get some more help in, like, oh, hey, now we can actually take like half a step back, not like a full step quite yet. And then once we saw that, we were like, duh, why weren't we doing this earlier? But it's always hard to do that when you're caught up in the middle of things.
Yeah, man. Well, clearly whatever you did, you figured it out. So it seems like it's, I know that you still, work super hard, and the business is, I'm assuming, doing really well. And, we definitely, everybody appreciates what you guys do. And I think that this is a good transition, into your new book, Fit for Success, which I was super excited to hear about and read about, of course. But the first thing, of course, I have to ask, like, why did you choose this type of book to write instead of like a fitness book, for example? And then why do you think this book in particular, since there's so many books about success and being successful, like, why do you think the world needed this book?
So 2020 has been a rough year for literally every single person on the entire planet, right? So We were definitely impacted by it. My wife was diagnosed with breast cancer earlier in the year. This is before COVID and quarantine hit. So it really just forced us to change a lot of things. And I'd already kind of had some ideas in my own head from RP and working with top level athletes and, you know, probably thousands of clients myself. Like, it's pretty easy to spot trends. It's the types of habits and things that successful people do. So I already had a pretty good idea. But then fast forward to 2020, now I really had to put everything truly into practice. It wasn't something just to talk about. I had to live and breathe all of this if we were to get through. Because she was diagnosed, she was in the hospital, had complications, had, you know, started chemo. And then what happens? COVID hits, quarantine, shelter in place. Now we're homeschooling our kids. We can't see friends and family, all this stuff. And it just felt like everything was piling on at once. And I know a lot of other people are going through the exact same thing this year. So this book is really about, you know, because the same principles that make you successful in fitness, you know, in health and fitness, are the same principles that help you overcome adversity in life. They help you become more successful in business. Like, there are key universal principles that make people successful, no matter what it is. So I wanted to tie all of that together, because so many people need to hear that message in 2020. And it's one thing. So, you know, maybe you read the book and you go, all right, well, I was like expecting these totally new revolutionary things. It's like, that's not really the case, because a lot of these ideas have been around for, you know, thousands of years, potentially, if you go back to something like Stoicism. But a lot of people, you need something sort of new, and you just need to hear it in a slightly different manner for it to really resonate. I don't know if you've ever seen that, but you can hear the same thing 5 or 10 times. And then one time it just happens. You're in the right mindset, or you just really need to hear it because of whatever's going on in your life, and it resonates and it hits and it sticks, and it's so much easier to deal with.
Yeah, absolutely, man. No, I could not agree more. And that does make a lot of sense. And I think that people are always looking for kind of the shiny object syndrome, right? Always looking for that new thing. But the same thing, it's just like with health and fitness, the funny thing is that people know what the hell they need to do. Like, as far as like the general basic stuff, like, right, eating, like, they should probably choose more leafy greens over the donut, right? They should probably move on a regular basis. But it's just like, people need it to be packaged in this interesting way. But it's just, that's what I got from reading through your book. And I noticed the same thing with the Renaissance Diet and things with the other books that you have. It's not fluffed up. There's not a ton of fat on it. You guys have trimmed it all off, and it's just like, look, objectively, like here's the research and evidence and just anecdotal evidence as well. It's just like, this is the shit that works. And now I'm gonna lay it out in the hierarchy like you did, which I really like. And then here's some action steps. And now it's just, you just have to do it.
Yeah, for sure. Well, that's the thing, right? Like, we sort of fundamentally know what to do, but it's one thing to say it, but it's another to do it. And so you need some concrete action steps on what to do in order to get started and to make some of these things become more habits, you know, more habitual. And so that's what the book does. Like, a lot of the feedback I've gotten so far is like, you know, hey, I really love the hierarchy structure. Hey, I also love just those little tips at the end of each chapter. Like, hey, I can just pick up some really sort of, they seem easy to do, but again, like once you start doing them repeatedly, they start building upon themselves. Like, you can fundamentally change a lot about who you are and what you do. And you'll just have better outcomes if you're able to do these things.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so real quick, I want to cover just an overview of the hierarchy that he has for success. And so real quick, the bottom tier is work ethic. And then as you go up the pyramid, it's internal locus of control, positive mindset, discipline, purpose, failure, and then recharge. And I love all of these, but what I want to know is how did you come up with these specifically? Did you just think of a ton and then you just trimmed away? But how did you come through with these seven?
Reading a couple hundred different books and sort of drawing on my own personal experiences and those of clients. So for example, the first time I really thought about the idea of internal locus of control, I really didn't even know that term. But I was listening to an audiobook walking around in my neighborhood, listening to Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. And, you know, he's talking about Viktor Frankl, who wrote Man's Search for Meaning, which is another awesome book. And he's talking about like him going through the concentration camps. All this horrible stuff around him is occurring. Yet he's not really letting it get to him. He always has that ability to choose how he responds to anything. And I said, wow, that seems like a really powerful idea. And again, it seems simple, right? We can always choose how we respond to things. But it's a heck of a lot harder when you are truly caught up in something. You know, your emotions want to take over. You want to be impulsive. You want to, and again, it's very hard to do. It's easy to say. It's hard to do, though. And again, it's like this is an idea that stood out to me. And then, you know, just reading all sorts of other books and biographies and things like that, you start to notice the same themes coming up. Now, it's not necessarily always written the exact same way, but you're like, wow, that idea that this guy said in something related to sports seems a heck of a lot like what this guy said about personal finances or business or whatever it is, right? And you're like, wow, these things seem to really kind of tie together. Like, now I can kind of see it. And so I originally started with about 10 of them, realized that some of them sort of intertwine, was able to pare it down to those seven, send it to some people like, hey, how crazy am I here? They're like, oh, hey, this all works. And actually, one good piece of feedback that I got that I thought was interesting from a friend of mine who's a Navy SEAL, he was like, there's nothing new here. And I said, yep, I'm very much aware of that. However, so there's a book, what's it called off the top of my head? Can I think of it? It's a Dale Carnegie book. It's not his main one. It's not how to win friends and people.
Shit, you said it on Steve's podcast, and now I can't remember what it was.
How to start living and stop worrying.
That's yes, there you go.
So this book was written in 1940, but he starts the book off by saying there's nothing new in this. Again, it's the same idea. Like, you just sometimes need to hear it in a little bit different manner. And if people are able to tell a good story around things and sort of interweave examples. So in the book, there's a lot of examples from, you know, folks like Annie Thor, soccer CrossFit Games champion, Maddie Rogers, one of the best weightlifters, Michigan baseball coach, who was coach of the year. Like, so there's just a lot of good, real world examples, just kind of help tie everything together. So again, that's kind of how it all started, and just seeing how these things had to be applied in my own life, in person, sort of live on a day-to-day basis while we're going through all this stuff. It's a real big wake-up call, like, hey, I think these are some really powerful messages. And given 2020, it's just going to really help a lot of people at the end of the day.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, what a better time to to go through all of this, especially the internal locus of control. That one is huge during this point.
Right, yeah.
One thing, which one of these, so work ethic, internal locus of control, positive mindset, discipline, purpose, failure, recharge, which one of these was the hardest for you to like cultivate and didn't come as natural? So which one were you like, really, this was, so I know hard work is kind of in your DNA and you've always worked really hard, but which one of these didn't come as easy and you really had to work at it over time, do more research, ask more questions, et cetera?
That's a really good question. Yeah, thanks for asking that. I would maybe lean towards, because I think I've always been a hard worker, fairly disciplined. I've always been maybe a little bit more optimistic. You know, my wife probably takes the slightly more pessimistic role when I'm over here. Usually, like, I'm not too worried about it. Like, I think things are going to be okay.
Same here.
Yeah, exactly. I would probably say just learning to deal with failure.
Mm.
And so, you know, people are like, well, why is failure in a book about success? It's like, well, you have to learn how to deal with obstacles and dealing with failures, because every successful person has failed probably numerous times. So it's not that you don't ever fail. It's what you learn from failure. It's sort of picking yourself off the ground, making sure you do learn something from it, and then keep going forward. That's really the big takeaway. And you know, no one ever likes to fail, of course, especially if you're a competitive person. You sort of can take it personally. It's just kind of how it is. And so I've always been like that. But just reading biographies and just hearing other people's stories just really helped drive that point home. Because you're like, wow, like, these are some of the most successful people in the entire world. And, you know, here they are talking about just repeated failures over and over, but they just stuck with it. They were gritty. They were resilient. And they just kept going. And eventually they became successful.
Mm-hmm. Do you have like a favorite failure in life? Basically just not necessarily a favorite failure, but one that might have benefited your life the most whenever you look back in hindsight, that really was kind of a turning point for you?
I don't know if I'll call it my favorite one, but one that really stands out to me is in high school, two different occasions, once my junior year, once my senior year, I was less than a second away from breaking some school records in track and field.
What event?
So my junior year was a 1600 meter relay. So again, there was a four-man relay.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we were so close and whatever, we didn't quite hit it. I'm not going to blame anybody. We all could have ran faster, I suppose. And then my senior year was all on me. It was an individual race. It was 800 meter. And yeah, I came up a little short, and I can still remember that exact feeling of being done and being like, wow, like, my high school running career is now officially over, and I did not hit my main goals. Like, these were the goals that drove me so hard. You know, here my friends in high school are like, whatever, out partying or hanging out and, you know, doing stupid stuff the kids are doing. I'm like the kid at home and working out because I just loved it.
Yeah.
Like, that's just what I did. That's who I was. And to come up that short, like, it still is with me today. Like, I still remember that. You know, not that it really has a big overall impact on me, but it's just like, that's always going to be there. I'm always going to remember, like, it doesn't matter. You can work as hard as you want. It doesn't really guarantee success. Like, you still have to do everything else. And, you know, it's just always kind of there as a reminder.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. No, I think of those all the time. There's moments like that has happened to me as well with high school football and things. And then, I think getting into bodybuilding a little bit. But those, I found that those failures can be it can be a big turning point. It can be a good inflection point to realize, did it only drive you more, or did it allow you to kind of realize, hey, it's not going to be the end of the world, or I'm not like, I'm not a failure necessarily just because I missed that 1 second? Or how did you kind of rebound from that?
Oh, I think it drove me for the most part. I'm kind of one of those people. And if you ever talk to Mike, you can ask him about this too. Whenever we'd be training and I would need to really get amped up for a big lift, you know, instead of shouting, encouraging things, I'd be like, no, I don't want encouragement. Like, I want negative motivation. I want you to, you know, tell me that I suck, that I can't do it or whatever. So I use that stuff as fuel and energy to just help drive, keep going, to push even harder.
For someone who doesn't, so the bottom of the pyramid is work ethic. For someone who, because what was interesting from Steve Hall's podcast is that you almost didn't include that one in there. You didn't include that in the hierarchy because it just did come so natural to you. But for somebody who it doesn't come as natural for, like to do the hard work, to go the extra mile, who maybe doesn't necessarily have that drive, what kind of instructions or maybe next step would you recommend?
You have to have a strong enough why, your purpose and your meaning, which is one of the pillars of success. You have to have that. And if it's truly strong enough, that's going to help drive you, right? And it has to be something that you really, truly care about, because you have to have that intrinsic motivation. So that's part of it. If you want to talk about improving your work ethic, like the takeaway point in the chapter is making a daily to-do list. And it sounds really simple and easy to do, but if you just commit to sticking with that, you know, 5 or 10 things that you want to do every single day, and they don't have to be huge things, they can be smaller things, but you just commit to doing them repeatedly. And I mean, now I'm to the point where by 9 a.m., I've got everything checked off my list. I'm like, okay, now what? Just, it feels good. It helps build some momentum. So that's something really simple that you can. And I know it seems super basic, but again, it just comes down to the discipline to do it, and you build those habits, and then it just becomes second nature for time.
Yeah, the momentum is something that I am very interested in, and I think it gets underlooked with anything, but especially behavior change. And I liked how you included in the book your morning routine, and you talked about how you get up before your family, and then you check off all these boxes. But I like how you start off with, like, for me, for example, I like to start off with something like reading. I like a small mountain to climb, right? But it's also a productive mountain, right? Like I can wake up, I can read, and it's also somewhat relaxing, but then also productive, and it just kind of gets my gears going. So it's like, could you talk about your morning routine a little bit and why you chose those things to do specifically and how it builds momentum going into your day?
Yeah. So probably the first thing to clarify there is, you know, people always like to ask, you have to get up early in the morning and do things. And I just want to make sure that people don't think there's anything magical about that. There's not necessarily anything magical about it. If you don't want to get up early, hey, I'm not here to judge you. Like, whatever. If you get it done at any point during the day, totally cool. For me, I just know with social media and 2 kids and a wife and family and all that, stuff's going to pop up, right? Like, there's going to come in emails and, you know, work emails where people are, you know, might need something immediately, or, you know, just stuff's going to pop up all the time. And I just can't sit down and really focus. So for me, it's basically 2 options. Do I want to do that really late at night? Maybe, I don't know. Or do I just want to get up early and, you know, kind of force myself to do it? And I mean, now, boy, it is really just a habit. Like, I don't, this morning I woke up 10 minutes before my alarm was supposed to go off. You know, it's like, it's not really a big deal now, but yeah, I just like to get up and do it. And, you know, I really, truly love to learn. Mm-hmm. It's one of those things where, looking back, I kind of kicked myself that I wasn't sort of reading and learning more. Now, at the same time, we were just so busy working in RP that it probably didn't make a lot of sense. But once I was able to step back a little bit and really focus on that, I just feel like I just see things a lot more clearly now, because I'm just like, huh, yeah, okay. Now I kind of have this wisdom and knowledge. Like, and it's, I want to make sure that people realize it's always a work in progress. Mm-hmm. Like, do I still have days or whatever that, you know, I struggle with every single one of these 7 things listed in the book? 100%, absolutely, because we're all human. But it's just this self-awareness to realize it. And instead of letting that stuff build up and dwell for days or weeks or whatever, and kind of go down that negative spiral, you're able to catch yourself a little bit quicker. So, okay, well, now what do I need to do to kind of get back on track to being more positive and happier and, you know, all that good stuff? That's really the big takeaway, I think.
Yeah. Do you have any type of go-to triggers or things to get you back on track whenever you feel lost or overwhelmed or confused about your next step, or you feel stuck or something like that? Do you have something? You could be fucking putting on a playlist and then having your whiteboard and really just starting, like, scratching everything and be like, what is important to me right now and how do I get there? Making a game plan. I don't know. Like, whenever you do feel stuck, what's kind of that first step you take?
Yeah. So I would say usually it's just kind of first realizing it, being self-aware that, like, oh, hey, like, I'm starting to really get pissed off about something. Okay, it might be time to sort of chill out. Usually just take a couple deep breaths. The other big thing that I would do, and it depends on the time of day, of course, but boy, if I go lift, then all of a sudden I feel a hell of a lot better.
The Joe Rogan approach. He gets out all of his demons by just sweating a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. Something like that. Or, you know, hey, just go for a little walk and just, you know, get out. You just have to detach a little bit from it. Like, just separate somehow and, you know, maybe kick on an audiobook or something, right? Like, that's going to pretty quickly shift your focus and, you know, then kind of get back on track. But, you know, really it's just being aware, and the more aware you can be, the quicker you can catch it, the quicker you can get back on track and take a couple deep breaths, chill out, relax, and keep going.
Are you typically more of like a long-term planner? I know, you know, with business, of course, people have, you know, yearly goals, they have 3-year goals, they have 5-year goals, et cetera. Do you work better that way by kind of starting from 5 years in the future and then working backwards? Or are you more of like a daily process oriented type person, and then you're going to figure it out kind of as you go along?
Oof, man, these are good questions. I guess if I had to say, so it's a balance of both. We, of course, have longer term goals, but when you start planning out too far ahead down the road, oh man, that's really hard to stick to because so many different things can happen. Take 2020. Nobody had planned on this. Nobody was expecting everything that's happened. And maybe you're really negatively impacted. Some businesses have benefited a lot. It's really hard when you start projecting out so many years ahead of time. It's really hard. You know, I could say, hey, I want to do, you know, X, Y, Z in 5 years. But I mean, you take something like 2020 and that could totally throw you off course where, yeah, you might eventually want to get there. But now that sort of longer term vision might have shifted quite a bit. So I think those are fine, good goals to have long term to kind of help keep you focused and moving forward in the right direction. But I think you also have to be pretty regimented on a daily basis, just kind of getting some of the little stuff done. So I don't really think it's an either or. I think it's more of like a both.
Yeah, I think I would agree. It's typically you have the outcome goal, for example, of losing 20 pounds, and then that's an important somewhat direction, right? You have the direction you're trying to head. The number is somewhat arbitrary, but then what you can do today starts with the daily process goals, right? I like that a lot.
For sure.
Yeah. And then so whenever it comes to I like the recharge one. I'm glad you had that one in there, because I think it's something one of the principles that really come out to my mind that I think people don't cultivate enough, especially if they can be more serious or driven or goal oriented. It's just silliness. It's just play. And I think, you know, with RP, I know Mike Isertel he's a character, man. His whenever he did his presentation and thing, I was laughing the entire time. But it's just like, I think that it's so important to embrace that silliness, embrace that play, and just not take yourself so seriously, you know?
Yeah. Well, Mike is the perfect example of that. And he's got a good way to balance it because he's super smart and he can get right to the point, but he can also, you know, crack jokes. And yeah, him and I, so here's why Mike and I have always worked so well together. We're sort of like the yin and the yang. But it's good, man, because the strengths that he has are some that I don't have. And the strengths that I have, he doesn't have. Like, he can't, you know, say super organized and on top of things. It's just not his cup of tea. And it's like, oh, check. Like, I got you there, man. Don't worry about it. And then, you know, if it comes to coming up with these elaborate algorithms and all this crazy stuff in the app, you know, that's him. That's our engineer team, which are, you know, they're doing stuff that, and sometimes I listen to them talk and I'm just like, all right.
Yeah.
So,
sounds good.
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's, you know, it's funny. Sometimes I feel that way listening to Mike talk. I can follow along to a certain extent, and then he gets really deep into it. If he's, you know, on a round table or debating with someone, I'm just like, it's like, yeah, sure, whatever you say, Mike. What's the takeaway? Just let me know what to do, man.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's the thing. That's the really interesting part. So talking about evidence-based fitness, and, you know, that's totally all well and good. But at the end of the day, you know, what percentage of people out there are really into evidence-based stuff? And it's still a really small percent. And if you want to start working with people that, you know, aren't as into it as all of us are, you have to be able to take that and just break it down into simple and easy to understand, like, bullet points, or, you know, you have to be able to get that story through them to them quick and easy. And, you know, that's why, you know, the RP diet books have been successful, because yeah, they can be complex, but they're presented in a way that's pretty simple and easy to understand. And so if you go back to this book, it's like, it's the same thing, you know, 150 pages. It's not going to be some 500 page thing where you have to spend 2 weeks reading it. It's like, no, you can knock this out in an afternoon, and it's going to fundamentally change you if you really apply everything, and it's easy to understand.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. I like the way that it's written. I do like the practical tips at the end, because I know I can find myself sometimes just, yeah, be like, okay, what's the point? What's the next thing that I need to do? And yeah, and I can guarantee that if people will read the book, and then even if they just follow the tips, the bullet points at the very end, it will 100%, as long as they take it seriously and put in the effort, it will make a positive impact.
That goes to pretty much anything, right? It's easy to talk about, but it's another different thing to really focus and commit to doing it. And, you know, here's the thing. There's another good book. It's called Slight Edge. And that's really the main point of the book. It's like, you don't aim to become 1,000,000% better. You aim just to become a tiny bit better every single day, just focusing on the basics. Mm-hmm. You just keep doing that day after day, week after week, month after month, and those little improvements, slow, gradual improvements. Sometimes they're so slow that you don't even recognize them. You don't even realize it. But again, the unsuccessful people, they give up because they want the instant results and they're not patient enough to stay with it. Mm-hmm. How many times have you had clients, and I've had tons, that they just kind of give up after a while because they're not seeing these remarkable results. And you're just like, you're actually making very good progress, but it's in your head that you need to be moving a lot faster. And as I say this, I'm hearing myself say it, and I'm kind of reminding myself when it comes to some various things, this book included, it's going to be like, you know, of course I would love to be like a New York Times bestseller overnight. Like, everyone wants that. But it's just usually not how it works. It's just slow and steady and getting the message out there and just, you know, impacting a couple people at a time, and just slowly spreading that word. And that's how it works. So that's why that book really resonated with me. I really love that one. I'm not even sure if it's mentioned in the book. Ironically, I think I read it after this, the rough draft was already written. I'm just like, this might be my number one favorite book of all time.
Oh, really? Yeah. Well, good. I'm going to definitely have to look into that one, but maybe it'll be a stepping stone for the next book. And I think that's something to think about as well. Like, even, you know, of course you have the desire for this to be a New York Times bestseller, but maybe this is the stepping stone to make the next book that you want to make. And then maybe it hits the New York Times bestseller, right? It's kind of the message throughout your entire book.
Yeah, that's really how it works. Of course, everyone wants overnight results, but that's just not how it works. I mean, do you know anyone that's gone from like 0 to 100 overnight? I mean, maybe there's a couple of people out there that just have been incredibly lucky or just have the right family. And
well, I think those, and held on to it, I think, is important, because there can be people right. Who get lucky breaks, but then as far as 10 sure. years later, then what happens?
Yeah. I like that. Yeah, for sure. You might win the lottery, but what do you typically read about? You hear about people that you know, they win the lottery, but then they don't have the good habits in place. And then what happens? Well, they end up losing all their money or something. They go broke. And it's just like, think about how many people would, you know, kill to have all of that, to, you know, to be blessed with that. And then they sort of piss it all away. Like, are you kidding me? And in fact, the number one thing that really irks me probably more than anything is people that have a ton of talent and then waste it.
Mm.
Given my background and just that I've always not had that talent, nothing irks me more than that.
Yeah.
And the people that have it and they just piss it away because they don't have the discipline or they don't have the work ethic.
Yeah.
That's probably the number one thing that really gets at me.
Dude, you see it in high school, especially with, I remember, I can think of so many running backs or DBs or whatever, like off the top of my head, that were just oozing natural talent and just fucked off. They wasted their potential. And I'm just like, you don't even know how good you have it and the springboard that you have to the next level, but it's just some type of self-sabotage or something gets in the way. And it's frustrating.
Super frustrating. I knew someone, I'm not going to name the person, of course, but I knew someone much more talented of a runner than I was. Could have went to college and ran. It's like, you know, a minute faster than I was in cross country, which is a very big deal. Just didn't have it though. Just didn't have it. And, you know, never went to college and, you know, who knows what he's doing now.
Right.
It's just like, dude, you only get one life, man. Like, why not make the most of it? I don't get it. I don't get it.
Yeah, it sucks because that doesn't click until later on. And then, you know, they could be working a shitty job, or they could be in jail or something, and their opportunities are completely limited and they just kind of shoot themselves in the foot. But it is what it is, man. That's the game. But cool. I want to make sure that I respect your time, and I just have basically one more question. And what I want to know is kind of, and I know you're promoting the book, you're excited about the book, all of that stuff. But I want to know what's next. What's next for RP? What's next for you? Is it going to, this could be business wise, this could be personal wise. Just what's kind of exciting you about the future?
We had a really good answer for that. In fact, it's actually in the book in one little part of it. But you know, it's the most exciting answer in the entire world. So here's what we're going to do. And here's what I'm going to do personally. We're going to do some little things each and every day to keep getting better. So here's a cool thing. When it comes to lifting, I'm going to keep lifting. I'm going to keep following the plan. When it comes to cardio, I'm going to keep following that plan. I'm just going to keep getting a little bit better. When it comes to personal finances, I'm going to keep saving and investing and keep getting, you know, a little bit more. When it comes to the RP Diet Coach app, we're going to keep putting out gradual improvements, keep learning from the feedback from all of our users. We're just going to keep getting a little bit better. And then when it comes to reading, I'm going to keep reading a little bit each day. I'm going to keep accumulating more and more knowledge and wisdom. And that's what we're going to do. It's literally the most boring answer in the entire world. But if more people realize that, like, that's how you truly become successful, everyone should do it. But not everyone does. That's the funny part. It's like, it's so simple. It's what's the phrase? It's simple, but not easy.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And these things are simple to do. And to quote Jim Rohn, they're simple to do, but they're simple not to do.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Yeah. Dude, you need to name your next book. This could be with RP because this applies to RP or just success in general. It's just the boring shit that works. It's like, that's literally, you have to, I think it was James Clear who just talked about, you have to fall in love with boredom. And it's so tough for people because they want to live in the extremes. They want to live with the excitement. They want to live in the all or nothing. They don't want to do everything because it's so, as you were saying that, I was like, it's not sexy, but he's fucking right. You know, that's it.
It's not sexy. People want sex appeal.
They can go to Mike for that, right? That's what they can do.
Something like that, I suppose.
Right. Well, cool. Awesome. Nick, this has been wonderful. Go ahead and tell people where they can get the book and where they can find out more about you.
Yeah, go to Amazon. Just search Fit for Success. It's going to pop up, and it's on Kindle, or you can get a hardcover copy. check out RP Strength on Instagram. If you want to follow me personally, at nick.shaw.rp. And hey, I'm going to keep doing the same stuff and get a little bit better each and every day. So if you're interested in that, it'd be perfect for you.
Yeah, I love it. I highly encourage all of you to go out there, get the book, follow his stuff, follow RP. Like I said, it's the boring shit that works. And if you want results, like this is the guy you have to follow. This is the company you have to follow. And this is the book you got to buy.
Wouldn't it be better if I just came on and I just had these like ridiculous claims of like, you need to do these three things. And it was like, drink celery juice and, you know, I don't know, cryotherapy every day. I don't even know. I'm just making these things up. Yeah. People are like, oh my God, that's so awesome. And then here I am. I'm like, oh, you need to do like the most boring shit in the world. But man,
yeah,
that's what it takes. But people want that new stuff. And that's why there's always these new things and new gimmicks and fads and everything that you see every year. And then what happens a year or two later, like no one even remembers that stuff.
Right. And I think that's what your book is around, the stuff that has stood the test of time over and over and over again. And I think that's why it's so valuable. That's exactly it. That's exactly it. All right, Nick, I want to talk to you for like 2 minutes off air, but thank you so much for doing this. Everyone go get the book and hopefully we can shake each other's hands in person soon enough. Okay.
Yeah, for sure. No doubt. Thanks for having me on.
And that is that, my friends. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of the More Than Fitness podcast. And please, if you could help me out a little bit here and leave a rate and review in iTunes, and also take a screenshot and post it up on your IG story. Tag me at MattMcLeod6. I'd love to share it. I'd love to connect with you. I'd love to hear your feedback about the podcast, and also so that we can share the word with other people. I would love to build up this community, build up this tribe of people that we have like you and I, and get the word out there. Also, if you want more free content, you can check the links in the description. I have my free 4-week workout plan, The Ultimate Physique Development. And also, if you want to work with me online one-on-one for personal coaching, you can check the link in the description as well. And anything else you need, please send me an email, send me a DM. I would love to hear from you. Again, thank you so much for listening.